Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, where we have transformed into an NCAA college football video game podcast. Let's go, Fred.
Tyler, I legally cannot allow myself to get excited for a Electronic Arts video game in the year of our Lord 2024, but man, I am really close. Like, it's just that, you know, it is the scorpion and the frog. I am the frog swimming across the river. I got EA on my back, and I know they're going to sting me, but I'm looking at this trailer for this video game, and it looks pretty amazing. I'm not going to lie.
So people were complaining about the fact that it didn't actually show any gameplay. To me, that doesn't matter. That's not what this trailer was about. This was a reveal trailer. And you know what they got right? They got college football right.
Yeah, the college football vibes are 100% correct.
Now, you had Florida touching the Gator on their way out. You had Clemson at the top of the hill about to run down into the stadium. You had Notre Dame hitting the play like a champion sign. You had Wyoming touching the giant cowboy statue. Like, they got the pageantry right. And I swear to God, if they license Enter Sandman from Metallica for Virginia Tech, I will lose my damn mind. Like,
all you need is an MP3 player. You know, all you got to do is pull up the Spotify, and you can do it yourself if you have to. But if they have it in the game, that'll be pretty amazing. Man, it is. If you are a college football fan, this is pretty damn amazing. Very exciting, and I really hope they don't screw it up. You know, fortunately, as an AEW podcast, we have never been stung by hoping that a video game is great when it looks like it could be great and then being disappointed by its many flaws. Mm-hmm. So everything's fine. It's all good.
Yeah. Listen, I am so beyond excited for this. I still binge play NCAA 14. I have dynasties going with Hawaii, Louisiana Tech, and Florida right now because
that is sicko stuff.
Yeah, well, Florida, because I'm a big Florida Gator fan, so. And, I can't wait. Like,
I'm currently trying to ruin my life with outside of the park baseball, so.
They made us wait 11 years for this game. I can't wait.
You know, you can't dare ruin college football by paying a player. I mean, are you insane? Goodness me.
Fuck the NCAA. Gotta hate those guys and girls.
Hate them all.
None of you are exempt from my hatred. Listen.
But yeah, that trailer looks good as hell, man. I'm really excited for it. Even as a guy, like, seriously, it's every cliche of like, well, I've been burned before. If maybe, you know, it's like the Arrested Development meme of, you know, every other couple that's trying to open a relationship has failed, but maybe it'll be different for us. That is 100% where I am. I really hope they don't screw this up. It looks like they're trying, at least, which is more than you can say about Madden for the past 20 years, more or less.
It's truly incredible that this game is finally here, Fred.
Did you see?
I can't wait.
Did you see Spencer Hall's tweet about the deluxe edition?
No, but I bet it's incredible.
It is. Give me one second. I don't want to blow with the punchline, but they're selling like $120 you know, special edition, right?
No, okay, so it's 70 for the base, 100 for the deluxe edition, and 150, I think they're calling it the ultimate.
Okay. Well, the, you know, there's a tweet that was like, oh, what would you expect to pay or expect to get if you paid $150 for, you know, the game, the ultimate edition? Mm-hmm. And he said $80. Really good line. Really good.
Spencer Hall is the best, man.
The Shutdown Fullcast, like, is the best podcast. No offense to, like, anyone else, especially, you know, people who ostensibly are our bosses.
I think I quote tweeted that with an answer. I need to find it because that it was a good one. No, I didn't quote tweet it. I was going to. Man. Yeah, for $150, I better be able to offer recruits cash in a Chick-fil-A bag.
You remember the you ever read about the late 80s University of Kentucky basketball, men's basketball scandal that happened and basically ruined Dwayne Casey's career for 20 years?
No.
He basically was responsible for sending out the money, and that players were definitely not getting were getting. And his FedEx box came open after he sent it out.
Oh no.
And that's how he and that whole the program at the time got busted. They nearly got the death penalty before they were like, oh, we can't actually penalize anyone. What are you, crazy?
Yeah. I highly recommend everybody to go watch the 30 for 30 Pony Access on SMU
Express.
And how they No,
is it Excess? Oh, okay, I get it.
The 30 for 30 is called Pony Excess.
I'm very good at
this. Phenomenally done. And you know what? It's wild because Skip Bayless covered those teams and covered the scandal for, I think, the Dallas Morning News.
Yeah.
And you forget that he used to be like a legit journalist and beat writer.
Before like,
Adam Schefter used to be too.
A crazed talking head with Harvey Danger hair.
Yeah. Just
speaking of paying off people, redcircle.com is your best way to give us money.
yes.
Look at that smooth transition, Tyler.
Yes. There's a donation tab on there. If you like us and you just feel like, hey, you know what? We're going to give you guys money because you talk about cool stuff.
I double checked that I got the correct correct name this time. I'm very good at my job. We had no show last week because I was vacationing, and you were not, but you're busy doing this thing I hear about called work.
Yeah, I'm in over my head with this new venture that I'm doing. I'm contributing to three sites, running one of them, and then also working at a bar on top of it. I'm in over my head. I've been going nonstop. But the Wolves beat the Nuggets last night by 45 points, which, let me tell you,
that series is crazy, man.
Minnesota sports fan, nothing will ever prepare you for the amount of pain that we have dealt with. And going up 2-0 by winning both games in Denver and then losing three in a row, you're just like, oh, here we go. There was a moment in, I think it was game four, where the Wolves were down eight. And then it was like 26 seconds left in the first half. They get a bucket, and then Ant goes down. It gets stolen. They get a dunk. Okay, 12 points. All right. Frustrating way to end the half. Then they botch a pass. And Jamal Murray, right in front of Kevin Harlan, hits like a 60-foot three-pointer to give them a 15-point lead in the half. And you just felt, oh, God, this is actually going to happen. They're going to blow this series after being up 2-0 going back home. And my goodness, nothing can prepare you for the pain of a Minnesota sports fan. But seeing them destroy the Denver Nuggets. Mike Malone, the head coach of the Nuggets, pulled his star, like his star players, with 10 minutes to go in the game.
Yeah.
Just pulled them. They put up 70 points. Gobert has held, Gobert's teams have held Jokic in the playoffs three times under 80 points, which is like unheard of in the NBA nowadays. That would have been a score you would have seen with the Knicks and the Heat in 1996.
The only team to ever do it have been ones with Gobert. But yeah, let's just let Draymond Green be up in his feelings.
Mm-hmm. Just, it was so much fun to watch. And yeah, that's about the only escape I have because, well, even when I'm doing that, I'm still writing. It's, I'm just going, 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 going. And eventually I'm just going to crash and burn. It's going to be bad.
Yeah, but, don't do that.
Don't well, do that. I'm on commission only, so I have to.
Well,
it's my own fault. I'm not asking for sympathy. I'm just, it's just the reality of where I'm at. And I have some regrets, but it also could end up being incredibly fruitful down the line. So we'll kind of see what path it takes.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of blowouts, the Caitlin Clark experience has got to the WNBA. And remember when everyone took that Sue Bird quote out of context and was like, you know, which he said basically, yeah, it's a hard adjustment to be a rookie
mm-hmm.
in the NBA. And everyone was like, oh, with such disrespect, she's a hater. Well, no. It is very hard to adjust to the WNBA as a rookie, and Caitlin Clark's finding it out. And this is just going to be part of it. I mean, they lost by 36 to the New York Liberty, who aren't worse, no worse than the second best team in the league.
They're a juggernaut, so like that's not even that bad.
No, it's just it happens when you're facing like that Sabrina Ionescu and Breanna Stewart and Gordy Vandersloot and John Cale Jones. It's just a ridiculously stacked roster. And Caitlin Clark is good, but it has not been a good couple games, and that's just gonna be part of it. So I think there's gonna be a lot of panic about this, but they'll be all right in the end. You know, I figured they'll go about 500 this year and she'll have a nice little season and probably win Rookie of the Year. You'd have to think. I don't know. It's going to be a very interesting year in the WNBA, though. So.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. And I got to say, the amount of attention the WNBA has been getting, they have done a really good job of capitalizing on it. And taking it and marketing their product in a way that's gathering a lot of attention from, I'm not going to say outside sources, but people and sites who necessarily wouldn't pay as much attention.
Yeah. Well, you know, you got to get these storylines going and, you know, fortunately before every WNBA game, they do a recap video. So I can tell what's going on.
Oh my God. They're WWE. I can't like them anymore.
But no, it is going to be a very fascinating season. You know, the Las Vegas Aces look like they're, you know, going to try to repeat. The Liberty are probably their top competition, barring major injury to either. And, you know, everyone's going to be paying attention to Caitlin. She is, you know, right in the middle of, well, she's arguably the most famous athlete in America right now, which is wild to say. We'll see how long that lasts, if the WNBA will actually be able to sustain success off of, you know, her presence in the league, or if it'll fizzle out. Because I'll tell you this, the WNBA is fun to follow. The league office is not very good at their jobs. So it is a rather not particularly well-run sports league. Case in point, they've announced they're finally doing chartered flights, and, you know, they had a phone call this week with the players to like go over it, and the players left the call and were like, we don't know what's going on. So they aren't very good at like details.
A plus.
Yes. Another thing that happened, and it happens every year, it was definitely the Buster Scruggs first time meme, but when they, you know, the preseason was going on, for that week on the WNBA League Pass app. They'll show, you know, all the different games that are going on, and they have nothing that shows, you know, if a game will actually be on the League Pass or not. So everyone just assumed it would be, and then they were all disappointed because it was not, because the WNBA did not have their stuff together. And so the Chicago, I think this was a Chicago Sky home game. It wasn't a Indiana Fever one. So someone on Instagram just started broadcasting the game from their phone and got like 100,000 plus people watching it for at least a minute. So it's all good. It's great.
Just wild.
Just good stuff.
Speaking of basketball, we're going to have some conversations about basketball and television, right? But we need to get back into the wrestling after 15 minutes of chicanery. But
I'd do more chicanery if you want.
Listen, I'm all for chicanery because this pro wrestling is, I'm not going to say it's not fun, but it's not not as fun as it could be. All right. AEW is going to be running 5 Collisions and Death Before Dishonor at Arlington, Texas's Esports Arena. It is a venue of about 2,500. It also happens to be across the street from the Logan Paul Mike Tyson fight, which is that fight at American Airlines or is that fight at AT&T?
Good question.
Because they might be able to sell out Jerry World for that. Mike Tyson's boxing.
It is at AT&T Stadium.
Jeez, they're going to put 85, 90,000 people in that building.
It's preposterous.
How much would you pay to go see that fight live?
Me, $0, because I wouldn't want to see it. it's going to be a joke regardless what happens. I mean, I don't really think that Jake Paul is a serious boxer, and I also don't think that Mike Tyson of 57 is really like representative.
Wait, is it Jake Paul or Logan Paul that's going to box him?
Jake that is going to be boxing.
Okay.
Don't care. And Mike Tyson is 57. Like, you know, who could possibly care about Mike Tyson boxing in 2024? But apparently the answer is a lot of people. It's going to be on Netflix. So that'll be something. Yeah.
I think this is a really interesting decision to spend so much time in one area. And yes, I kind of love it. And let me tell you why. They're going to run these collisions in the same building. And you know what they're going to do? They're going to get vibes of WCW Saturday Night. And Tony Khan, I think, is going to lean hard into it. Because Collision already feels like a throwback kind of wrestling show. And I would love, absolutely love, for them to do that. For them to end up like going retro with Collision and doing some of those things where you have like the unique interview camera shots. Like the earlier iterations of Power were so fucking great because they're in the studio and they're doing interviews right in front of the live crowd, but it feels like you're backstage. Like, do that kind of stuff. Make it feel different. Having the same venue gives you the opportunity to make it feel like a different kind of wrestling show. Make it feel different from Dynamite. I love the idea. I don't know how the execution is going to work, Fred. I genuinely don't. But I'm very, very, very excited to see what it could end up being.
Yeah. To be the pessimist here, I do think it is fairly concerning about AEW's attendance, which has been historically pretty poor for Collisions, despite them being on Saturday nights and ostensibly an easier night to get people to pay money to go to a thing on. And I also think, you know, you look at the ratings and all that, you know, it's not great. The key demo is slowly sliding down, I think, most weeks. And I mean, they're maintaining their place in the top 10, so that could just be a carry-on effect of the decline of TV ratings outside of major events. It's really interesting. They have to be getting paid something by Arlington, right? Like, you've got to think.
I don't know.
Do six shows in 5 weeks? That's got to be some kind of deal like that, you know?
Well, it could just be, hey, we're going to book your venue, and then we're going to load up our trucks, and we're going to leave them in your parking lot.
I would still think that they would be taking a deal to do that. I mean, I just can't.
It very well could be, but I do think the idea of trying this with how the attendance has been with Collision, with how pro wrestling, it's not in a boom period, but I wouldn't call it like down. It just, it's in kind of this weird space, and especially with how AEW has, I wonder how much permanent damage they did with the MJF stuff, because they were on such a heater, and then the MJF stuff kind of killed the momentum of what people knew AEW to be, which was a true alternative promotion, and a promotion that was going to cater to wrestling fans, not WWE fans, wrestling fans. Then they leaned heavy into the WWE shtick. I loved the Jericho stuff, where they were sports entertainers in the Jericho Appreciation Society. I thought that was good. But then you have your world title pictured with it, and putting too much hot sauce on your sesame chicken at a Chinese restaurant. Fuck all the way off. Like, I think that did too much irreparable damage, or if it will be repaired, it's going to take a long time to get there. And I'm very intrigued to see what this will end up looking like, how things will grow and develop over the course of time. I genuinely don't know, Fred. I want to see it. I want to see how this ends up like kind of manifesting over the course of that 6 week period. I'm sure if they didn't get directly paid, they got a hell of a deal. Oh, hey, you're going to book us for six nights. One of them's going to be the Logan Paul Mike Tyson fight, which nobody would be here anyways. Okay.
Well, I am not optimistic that they're going to draw very many people that night in particular.
Well, it's only a 2,500 seat building. 2,500 is plausible.
It's right next to that stadium, though. I mean, I think that's going to have a pretty major effect.
Think about this. The Logan Paul Mike Tyson fight's not going to go on until like 11 p.m., right? Go to Collision, 7 to 9. Walk across the street, miss half of one of the prelim fights, and you go to both.
Maybe.
I bet you're going to have around 500 people who try to do both. Like, we're not even talking that much of the stadium. 500 people of probably like 90,000 people who are going to have tickets.
I don't have a good feeling. That's all I got to say.
We're going to find out, because they're announcing
this
2 months in advance. But I'm really intrigued to see how the presentation is. I'm intrigued to see what kind of nerd things Tony wants to do. You still have Tony Schiavone and Jim Ross on staff, who were a part of like WCW and WCW Saturday Night, and how that kind of studio show ended up looking. I wonder if they're going to try and do a studio-esque type presentation with this arena, because it's not a traditional pro wrestling arena that we have grown to know. This is an indie arena. Mm-hmm. So how are you going to make this feel different? How are you going to make this look different? I can't wait. It's going to be fascinating.
I hope that they actually do try to make it look and feel different than usual, because I think that's a huge part of, you know, I think that's kind of an issue they have, you know, to be honest, is they just feel kind of, you know, the production, I think, has slowly got WWE-ified over the past couple of years in general. And, you know, I think the little touches where it does break away from that, you know, let's say, you know, like one thing I really like that they do is the Renee Paquette ringside things as part of the Collision matches. I'm sorry, the Continental Championship matches, I should say. That's a really cool touch. It felt like in the very early days of Dynamite pre-pandemic that literally every part of the building was part of the show. you know, because you'd have occasional just wild brawls. You know, like the one I like to reference is the backstage brawl between, I want to say, the Bucks and the Proud and Powerful, where Orange Cassidy's just in the bathroom hanging out. And also the Cody Rhodes, Chris Jericho thing, where Chris Jericho has locked himself in the luxury box and Cody Rhodes punches through the glass to get in. You know, that kind of stuff just made the show feel so dynamic. And, yeah, you know, when you've got everything constrained to the ring and, you know, the one spot backstage for people to do interviews, you know, that gets very, very stale very quickly, I feel like. And, you know, to have that kind of diversity, it was an important part, I think, of the early Dynamites. And it's something that I hope that they would bring back to try to make themselves feel different.
Okay, I want to read these to you.
Sure.
Because I think these are absolutely phenomenal.
Famously, none I can't read.
Yes, none of these are actually in the college football game, but they should.
Okay.
These three settings. One is called Beat the Case. Powered by EA Sports NIL Collective Technology, users will be able to call boosters at 3 a.m. to bribe you out of a DUI.
Oh, God.
Send Snap for quarterbacks only. EA will give users the opportunity to Snapchat college girls. The hornier, the better. Dick pics will double XP. However, screenshots will lower star value. And lastly, hedge your future. See that dope app your roommate just downloaded? Max bet money lines to drop your NIL on 10-leg parlays. That's what I need out of a college football game.
Oh, Lord. All right.
Yep. All right, moving on. Let's talk about Chuck Taylor. And his career may be over due to bone necrosis in his ankle. And I believe it was written in the Observer, Fred, that Chuck wanted to do that last match, the parking lot brawl.
Yeah.
And, oh, God, Plunder Chucky T is one of my favorite things in AEW history. That parking lot brawl with Proud and Powerful is still one of my favorite AEW matches of all time.
Yeah. I still have not got to this one yet. I haven't watched basically anything from last week. But I've always loved Chuck Taylor. I can't really say he was underused in AEW, but I always would have loved to have seen him like get a really big moment there. And I feel like, you know, he almost didn't. Like, you know, the Plunder matches, the parking lot brawls really were the best friends thing. And it's fitting that that's the blow off to, you know, the on-screen relationship with Trent. Mm-hmm. It was a nice little booking touch. But man, one of my earliest exposures to indie wrestling was the clip of Chuck Taylor scaring children at ringside. Which is, if you haven't seen it, is sublime. He is extremely funny. His Twitter account at its high point was arguably the best in wrestling. And on top of all that, he was a damn good wrestler. I'm glad that that we got you know, got him to be in a major league company in the U.S. Mm-hmm. He deserved that. He contributed. And I think you know, he's extremely talented, and I always enjoyed him. And it's a shame. I'm sad that, you know, this happened. I hope that he, you know, selfishly, I do hope that he's able to recover and return in the future. But if this is it, I mean, you know, great way to go out, having a signature match with your, you know, a real life friend. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. It rules that he got to do that. And it's really sad that this happened.
Long live the grenade spot from Chikara. That's all I can say.
Yes.
Moving on with the news. Eddie Kingston is believed to have broken his leg at NJPW Strong Resurgence on May 11th in Ontario, California, where he lost the Strong Openweight title to Gabe Kidd. And it was why he was replaced by Darby Allin for Double or Nothing. Fred, sucks for Eddie, but from an on-screen perspective, I actually think this is the perfect time for him to go away for a little while.
Yeah, he arguably could benefit from that, especially after dropping the belt to Okada. a few weeks ago, and then dropping this belt, maybe possibly due to injury. Bad run of AEW related wrestlers having that happen to them in New Japan strong shows. You know, this is a rough week for personal favorites between Chuck and Eddie. Eddie, I think, is just a tremendous guy. He's 100% vibes. I can see why someone wouldn't like him, but I love him. He just has that, just comes across as like...
He's authentic.
Legit, very authentic character, yeah. A completely legit guy in everything he's doing on screen. And it's awesome. And this is really an unfortunate injury. Apparently, he couldn't get up for like 5 minutes after the conclusion of the match. Now, granted, was that selling? Who knows? But he also broke his damn leg. So the fact he was even able to do the post-match angle with Jack Perry in the books was impressive. Yeah, obviously hoping for a speedy recovery. And but, you know, it's going to be, it depends on the severity of the break and everything, but it's weeks to months. So we'll be without him for a while. And it really sucks. You know, I don't think he's having the year he was in 2023 just because of opportunity. He's kind of cycled down in AEW. But it's, you know, that's not how you want to have a guy take some time off, you know.
No, but if you're going to get hurt, it's kind of perfect timing. All the best to Eddie. Florida, the state of Florida, dropped the charges related to Cash Wheeler's alleged road rage incident. I don't know if there's really anything more we can comment on this other than it's going to be one of two things. One, Cash is 100% innocent, or there just wasn't enough to charge him and actually win a trial.
Yeah.
It sounds like it was one of those things.
It looks, according to Meltzer, they dropped the charges about a week, actually literally a week before they're going to start the trial. It's interesting because he noted that the guy that had alleged this happened took a photograph of the Jeep that was involved in the incident that the other person was driving, allegedly Wheeler. And also he picked out Wheeler from a lineup. Now,
oh,
interesting. Yeah. I don't know what happened to cause them to drop it. Maybe they just, I mean, granted, I would disagree, but maybe they thought that it wasn't severe enough to proceed with, or they just didn't have enough evidence that they felt likely to get a conviction. It's just very interesting that they dropped the charges without even going to trial.
If you said pick him out of a lineup, I wonder if the victim in this case said that no, this wasn't the person after seeing the lineup.
I would have to think that the way it was written, although, you know, it's Davies, that it was the guy that he identified Wheeler as the driver, is the impression. Okay. I got from reading that. So I don't know, it's interesting, it's curious, but good news for him, because that was serious stuff that he was facing. So now he's not facing it. So yeah, hopefully he didn't do it. It was all a misunderstanding or something. And, you know, I think we also saw, well, never mind. I won't bring that up on this show. But yeah, it's very interesting.
Speaking of interesting, guy got thrown out in Edmonton in the front row for making lewd remarks during a Sky Blue versus Rachel Ellering ROH match. Aubrey Edwards got security over, removed the fan and his child. Poor kid. At a wrestling show, and his dad gets him kicked out. But good on AEW for acting on it and being like, no, you're not going to make those kind of lewd comments at our talent. And I don't know what those lewd comments were. I don't care to know. But if they're bad enough to get you kicked out of a wrestling show, then you shouldn't be saying those.
Also, you shouldn't be saying it with your kid with you, like this dude apparently did.
But it's even worse with the kid next to you, man.
Yeah, like, what are you doing? But yeah, I'm glad AEW and the security handled it. And apparently, I think Paige also had some issue with people, that guy and also people around him earlier in the show. But yeah, don't be a creep at shows. It's real easy to not be an asshole. So try that.
Yep. Speaking of not being an asshole, Kenny Omega He said on his Twitch stream last Friday that he would be having surgery very, very soon. I think the surgery isn't going to involve the colostomy bag, kind of like he was mentioning on television. I think this is something else where they're going to be utilizing a different type of procedure in order to try and fix what is ailing him.
Yeah. To be determined, all that. We will see.
Mm-hmm. This is an interesting development from the Nyla Rose situation down in Oklahoma. From F4W Online, the Oklahoma State Athletic Commission is considering a rule change that would allow transgender professional wrestlers to perform in the state. They emailed Chris Arrington, AEW Senior Vice President. The correction to this violation is for you, the promoter, to not allow a male to wrestle a female at any future events promoted in the state of Oklahoma. If you are good with correcting this violation, this email is as far as it will go. If you prefer to present your case in a hearing before the commission, we can also accommodate that, he wrote. To me, I'm not quite sure how to take that, Fred. Are they talking about Nyla Rose can't compete against females, or are they talking about just in general and based on how you have things written in our document that the rule change has already been fixed? Like I just want to make sure I understand that.
The rule is still in the books. And Meltzer mentioned that two local promoters are the ones that called and complained, saying that the rules have to be applied evenly to everyone. And
you know what? If the rule is shitty, but it's being enforced unfairly, the promoters technically aren't wrong, but they're fighting the wrong fight.
Yeah.
They should be like, you're enforcing this poorly, which is bullshit. But the rule itself is bullshit, so just get rid of the rule.
Yeah, that's the problem, or that's the solution, is to get rid of the rule. So apparently they have to get this passed through a bill in front of the Oklahoma legislature, which is heavily Republican, and that they tend to run on platforms of anti-trans stances. So if, you know, it's kind of a situation where if the wrong person gets, you know, becomes aware of what is in the bill, you know, and specifically that it would allow, that it would remove that rule against trans competitors, I think that it could unfortunately turn into a kind of gross hobby horse for a kind of gross person. But that's not just a possibility on the horizon. We'll see what happens with all of this.
Yep, it is worth noting that AEW's Associate General Counsel, Alyssa Harrington, which is that Chris's wife by chance?
I have no idea. I really don't.
I don't either, but just by the way things are laid out, I'm like, oh, okay. Replied to the email today, stated that AEW agreed to correct the violation. Quote, AEW agrees to the correction. If you have any further questions or concerns, please let Mr. Harrington and me know. End quote. The full report is from WrestleNomics. Of course, Brandon Thurston is probably the best person in all of wrestling media, which thank God he exists. And they're proposing a rule change, which, as you said, needs to be voted on in the legislature. But it feels like this is progress in the positive direction, and they're not going to make things worse in the state of Oklahoma as far as potentially getting one of these things passed, because by continuing to break the rules is not going to win you favors with the people who don't want to change it. So it just sounds like they're dotting their I's and crossing their T's, and let's just hope that they get rid of this stupid law.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, you know, I know you know, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you don't have zero, you have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy Slab Packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to... Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club Slab Packs. They're better than those mystery packs, because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club Slab Packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided, an explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? Whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
Turner Broadcasting may be losing the rights to their NBA package to NBC. Listen. Oh, that sketch is incredible. It is expected to be beneficial for AEW's TV negotiations. I don't know if anything's necessarily going to be beneficial for AEW's TV negotiations other than AEW just being a good product for Turner, because
yeah, it's a little speculative, you know.
It's live sports. Live sports sell. Live sports are good for companies, and they pay big money for live sports. So even if they get their package, which I believe has always been the B package, because the A package has the finals. And if they get the B package, okay, that doesn't mean that AEW is out of the running. You want as many live sports as you can get. TNT is probably kicking themselves for getting rid of Sunday Night Football. If you don't know, TNT had Sunday Night Football, I believe, through the 1995 season for half of the year. The other half was ESPN. And then ESPN took the full contract because TNT, I think the reason was they wanted to focus on basketball. Well, NFL is making you a lot more money now, baby. But that's neither here nor there. We'll see how this impacts the TV rights. I believe it was reported, and I don't remember who was the one who said it, the negotiating window, exclusive negotiating window for AEW and Warner goes through either July or August.
Yeah, to be seen. Very interesting. More, I think, as an NBA fan, personally, than as something that will inherently... I mean, it will have an effect, but I don't think it's going to, like... then NBA's gone, so AEW's going to make double the money. I don't exactly think that's going to be the...
money, woo.
Yeah, the result there.
All right. Sammy Guevara is no longer suspended by AEW, per Dave Meltzer in The Observer. He's been off
for a while,
for nearly 2 months. Look, there is a chance that they just don't have anything creatively for him. And you know what? That's okay. It's fine. Kind of sucks for him, but
yeah. I hope selfishly that when he comes back, he is not in the Chris Jericho orbit. I think they just need to keep those two separated for a while. Yeah, I think that it's a little too much of every time it happens, it's like, oh, Chris Jericho's little friend, Sammy Guevara. And I feel like that's not good for Sammy.
No. We'll see what happens when he comes back, because it's going to tell you everything you need to know about his future at the company, how well that return goes. AEW has debuted Meal and a Match, co-hosted by Renee Paquette and friend of the show, RJ City, debuting. I think it already has debuted by the time we have recorded this.
Yep.
With Eddie Kingston as the first guest. Now, this kind of gives vibes of that series that the WWE Network did. Dinner for Three. But this seems better because they're actually watching and talking about wrestling.
Yeah.
I kind of dig that. Do you know what the first what match they watched with Kingston was? It a Kawada match?
I doubt that because it'd be a rights issue. I assume, but let me see if I can figure it out. It's 23 minutes 40 seconds. Let's see. They show. I see some Penta footage. Penta and Ray. Clip of Eddie talking.
Wait, Penta and Ray. I wonder if it's all in. Penta wasn't in that six man at the end.
Yeah, clips of Eddie beating Claudio. I don't know that they actually said I don't watch a whole match. So that's a lie. RJ.
Maybe they're talking about a match. I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. But look, if it's got RJ City and Renee Paquette, it's bound to be at least entertaining.
Yeah. Oh, it should be fun. Yeah.
RJ is one of the funniest people I've ever talked to. And we hope to get him back on this program here soon.
Efforts have been made.
Good news for Anthony Henry, who was released at one point by AEW. He's been cleared to return from his broken jaw. So Tony Khan did say that he was going to bring back Anthony Henry when he was healthy. And here we go. Now I'm sure we'll see him back in the fold real soon. Speaking of injuries, Powerhouse Hobbs has started physical therapy on his patella injury. I believe it was a ruptured patella. If you've already started rehab on that dog, good for you.
Yeah. Got that dog in him. Man, he's going to be something. And he's obviously got a great work ethic. But yeah, it's seems amazingly quick to already be launching rehab, but here we are. So fingers crossed that it all goes well. We'll get him back as soon as he's ready.
Yep. And speaking of ready, Ricky Starks says he's healthy and isn't sure why he's not on TV. This has just got to be a creative thing.
Probably, yeah.
They focus on pay-per-view cycles. That's kind of how this company is booked. We're going to book in 3 month stanzas. This is going to be our plan, X, Y, to Z. But now that they're shifting to more pay-per-views in the calendar year, it's a little bit different. So I'm guessing Tony Khan's just trying to get his rhythm in with that type of structure and getting creative for Ricky Starks, I believe, is a part of that. That's my hypothetical.
It seems appropriate. It seems like a good guess.
Mm-hmm. Per the Wrestling Observer newsletter, this one is fascinating. Max Caster said that he's tried to get Chuck Palumbo, Rico, Sean Waltman, and Bart Gunn to do AEW spots working with the Acclaimed because of their history with Billy Gunn. I mean, any one-time cameo is fine.
That's a belt.
Past that, I don't see any purpose for it. Look, I would love to see Rico. I loved Rico. Older guy who used to be a Vegas cop who's got legit, I can kill you with my feet energy. Rico ruled. I wish he would have gotten a push, but I think his character being so flamboyant in the year 2003, they weren't ready for that. You could do that character now, and I think it would be a lot more over.
Yes, I agree. It was, just not the right guy at the right time. Right gimmick at the right time, I should say. But he always seemed pretty cool. I will say that at some point in time, like, this might have been all right, but I am so out on the whole Acclaim plus Billy Gunn thing, because it really did turn late. Like, matches would just turn into Billy Gunn killing everyone on the roster because he's so big. And it's like, okay, who are we trying to get over? Because I should, probably shouldn't be the guy that's almost 60.
Push the old dudes. That's what I say. The Young Bucks have their Reebok pump up shoes.
Did you see this ad last night?
No, I missed it. But let me tell you, please tell me they're doing some kind of John Cena gimmick.
They're doing ads. They did an ad where they were wrestling John Silver and Alex Reynolds, and they were losing, and then they pumped up their shoes and then super kicked the Dark Order and won. Extremely entertaining as a concept, and you know, very Young Bucks-ish, because basically being the Elite turned into a shoe show for the majority, you know, for the last few months, when they just kind of didn't want to do it anymore. So
look, the Young Bucks gimmick right now is just incredible. Let's do a quick catch up on AEW before we kind of get out of here. We got a good bit of the news. How great is Kazuchika Okada? I think we need to start there.
I've done a little math over here, Tyler, and the numbers are showing that he's good.
Hey, listen, when you can compare contrast film with data, and they both say the answer is yes, hell yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he's just perfect as like this TV cocky heel. The low blow gimmick is great heel heat. I think the Elite are working really well. I want to caveat that a little bit. In that, I don't know how I feel about the whole like this kind of tilting into them actually using their, you know, air quote power as executives on screen to fire people, you know, that whole gimmick. I just don't know, man, because it's just kind of, I don't know. I don't know that there's nothing wrong with what they're doing, how they're approaching it, the performances and so forth. But I just don't know that I need more heel authority figure stuff in the year of our Lord 2024. Like, they kind of got ran into the ground by WWE and then following in their footsteps TNA for the most part of the past 24 years. I don't know. It's so stale, and I would really personally prefer that not be such an aspect of the storyline, but I also know that it's hard to not do it when they have these characters. So I don't know. It's kind of, it's a difficult spot, I think, for me as a, you know, as a fan to kind of analyze and be like, you know, is this good or bad? So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. So far, I think it's been generally very positive on my end. That is just a regret / concern that I have.
Yeah, I get it. I'm not really that concerned long term. I want to see, for me, where the Okada character goes to really kind of start to determine is he a true home run success? Where, like, with how New Japan's show structure was, you had a bunch of six-man tags, and then, you know, you had your blow-offs at the bigger shows. American television isn't really like that. How many times can you wrestle at Dax Harwood with no stakes without moving up and winning the big belt? He's just perfect with the Bucks, because the Bucks just like to talk and be snarmy heels, and then he can just go like, bitch. And it's just perfect comedic timing, and it's great.
Yeah.
But where's his evolution going to come? Because eventually he's going to split from the Bucks. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
It might not be for 3 years, but then how is he going to continue to grow and evolve within the landscape of what American television wrestling is? because at a certain point, you just have to be able to do some of those things if you're a top guy.
Yes, and I agree. But I think that any concerns about that should be pretty well put to bed just because of how well he's adjusted to doing this role, which is rather unlike anything he's done for the majority of his career.
I want to counter that, Fred, because I think his role has been relatively minimalistic considering his star power, considering how great he is. And he's arguably a Mount Rushmore professional wrestler of all time. Like if you make your Mount Rushmore professional wrestling, you can make a strong argument that Kazuchika Okada deserves a spot.
Yep.
And they aren't asking him to do a whole lot with this gimmick right now. And whether that's by design or not, he's going to have more on his plate in the context of what this gimmick is. And how is he going to be able to handle that in terms of his communication, his delivery? He's great with the role he's given, but when you expand on it, you add other variables. And that's not to say he can't or he won't. And that's not the whole point of this. It's you're adding a variable which you don't have an answer for. Is he going to be able to do a big promo battle in English with the Kenny Omega when he comes back? Is he going to be able to do some of those things? Those are questions we have to answer that we don't have answers for right now. And for me, Fred, I think that's going to be a huge part of his growth and development within the company, is being able to answer those questions. Without a shadow of a doubt, he has crushed every single expectation that we've had coming into AEW. But there's still more, and there's still more that he has to do. And there's still more he's going to be asked to do. And with some of the language barrier stuff, I'm very interested to see how that manifests and how that grows and develops, because for lack of a better way to phrase it, you don't have foreigners who don't speak English well on top of American companies for a long time. A lot of that in the past has had to do with racism, with an unwillingness to adapt what you're doing to accommodate somebody who's from a different part of the world for a long period of time. You want to do things the way you want to do them. And I think people have been unwilling to adapt for that reason. Tony Khan feels different in that aspect. But the American audience, and there were some interesting quotes from Konosuke Takeshita about this. I don't know if you saw that, Fred.
I did see that. I forgot to put that in the notes.
Yeah, where Takeshita talked about how it's not he wouldn't call it discrimination, but he feels like there's less opportunities for somebody like himself on American television when in terms of professional wrestling. That's a paraphrase. It's not an exact quote. So how is Okada going to be able to handle like a promo battle? How is he going to be able to, can he command a ring and talk for 12 minutes? You don't have him doing that right now. You know, you may never have him doing that, and it may never matter. But people in American television wrestling want that stuff. Whether or not we as hardcores want it, your casual fan, and the idea of the casual fan in this context is, I want to turn on Dynamite every Wednesday, and I want to order the pay-per-views that I think look really good. That casual fan exists. That is a decent portion of your fan base. That fan is going to want to see your top stars do promos. Well, eventually Okada is going to be, they're going to require him to do something like that. So how is that going to evolve? His role is great and he's excelled and arguably perfected it, but that role is going to have to grow. How is he going to grow with it in the context of American professional wrestling? We don't know. To me, that's what I'm going to be looking for. How are they going to expand that role? How are they going to let him expand that role? And how successful will he be with it? It's going to be great to watch because I think he'll crush it, but there is no guarantee.
Yeah. I just think that the easiest way, I don't know, to me, it's kind of crazy to be like, well, we have Kazuchika Okada, but we can't really push him as a top-of-the-card guy because he can't do promo battles. I mean, even...
Well, that's not what I meant, but your top, tippy-top guys they get promo time in the ring. So is Okada just not going to do that? Like, to me, the answer is no. He's going to do that. So how is he going to do when he has those opportunities? And I think you can skirt around some of it. They're doing that right now with the Bucks setting him up. And then he just calls somebody a bitch. And it's just phenomenal comedic timing. And he's just great. And he doesn't need to say everything. But he's going to be asked to do that at some point. It may be in 3 years. And in 3 years, you can learn a significant portion of the English language and be a lot more comfortable and become significantly closer to a native speaker. Or you can truly be fluent. Hell, he could be fluent by the end of the year. I don't think anybody would be completely shocked. But being able to do that in the middle of the ring with a Kenny Omega, who's a great talker, with a Chris Jericho, like, those are real questions that we're going to need to have answers to at some point, because there are too many people that watch American television wrestling who are going to require that from their tippy top guys, fair or foul.
I mean, there's been a historical solution to this, and it's called a manager, you know, or a mouthpiece. And it's a solved problem. We just stopped using it because Vince McMahon didn't want to use them. And everyone else is like, well, Vince must be right, and just blindly followed him. Fortunately, AEW is a little more manager friendly. And if they need to have a situation where Okada is in a top program as a top guy, and they need to do a talking segment, they can have him with someone as his mouthpiece, and they'll be able to make that work. But I just think the idea that, like, Okada is held back from being a top level guy in AEW is kind of a little absurd on its face, just because he is a top guy in AEW. He gets some of the biggest reactions when he comes out. He's treated like a major star by both the company and presentation and by the fans and reception. And I think it's kind of a non-issue. If he gets booked into a situation where he needs to start cutting 20-minute promos, and if he can't do that well, then he's a failure. That's a problem with the booker. That's not a problem with him.
So I think I'm being a little obtuse, and I think you're right in context. You don't need to necessarily book yourself into that, but I'm talking about just the general landscape of how kind of American TV wrestling has worked. All the top guys throughout the history of even AEW have been able to do that. And are you going to have Okada just break the mold and he's never going to be that guy to do that? Yeah, you had Andre the Giant, who had a mouthpiece forever. But Andre the Giant was probably the most unique wrestler we've ever seen. Like, Okada's awesome. But in contrast, he's not unique at all. Like, compared to, like, an Andre the Giant. So,
I think it's charisma that matters, is the most important thing. And he's got charisma. He comes across like a star. He looks like a star. He performs like a star. I think any attempt to place him as a problem or to identify a problem with his ability to be a top guy in the U.S. is looking for a problem that doesn't exist. I think he's already shown that he's a major star in the United States. He gets huge reactions when he comes out. He gets huge reactions from his matches. There's more than one way to skin a cat. And if we're just going to, you know, if we're going to insist that he still needs to, you know, be doing the 2005 WWE Raw playbook, then the industry is just kind of screwed. I'm not even asking for, like, you know, like, completely reinventing what wrestling is to some extent. I'm just asking people to, like, run a different playbook and not just do Triple H bullshit.
Yeah, maybe I'm just overthinking this. I'm just trying to... I don't
think you are, sorry, but...
Yeah, you're just fine. I'm just fascinated to see how...
Respectfully, you're wrong as hell.
I'm just fascinated to kind of see how this whole thing develops, because I think what he has is going to be able to carry him to a certain point, but is he going to be able to truly elevate the product to a mainstream audience I think he should, but that doesn't mean everybody else will. Look, maybe I'm just talking about my ass. Maybe I'm being 100% right. Maybe, probably somewhere in the middle, probably closer to talking about my ass. But look, we've never had a tippy top guy for a significant period of time who hasn't been able to truly cut long form promos in English. This is a new territory, whether it's fair to Okada or not. It's a new territory. And maybe the simple answer is a manager, Fred. Maybe that is the simple answer. But it's just fascinating to kind of look at when you look at the history of wrestling, even with like WWE, and then you can almost look at like Takeshita, how he's been booked. You can kind of draw some parallels. Like, there are things to really take into consideration here. And I just think it's fair to at least keep an open mind to that question. That's all.
I think it'll be just fine. I don't even know that they're really planning on having be the absolute number one guy in the company when Will Ospreay's around. But I mean, Okada is obviously going to be like a top three level guy, top five in the company, as long as he's in the company. Unless it's like he's 48 and the wheels have fallen off or something, which is a long way away. One note I wanted to make this week, for the women's division, two notes actually. One, I don't think that Toni Storm match with Harley Cameron was particularly great. It wasn't bad or anything. It was pretty kind of good, you know. But I have to say, Toni Storm was so extremely crisp in her performances of moves in that match that it's kind of easy to forget, because for a while her match was really dragged down by the gimmick, and you could argue that she's still too gimmick heavy. But I was very impressed by that this week, and I thought it was worth mentioning. Sticking with the women's division theme, Mercedes Moné, did you watch that go home segment with Willow this week? I forget what part of the show you got in.
So good.
I would say that Mercedes was not why it was good, though.
No, Willow outshined her big time.
Yes, that was my feeling as well.
And
Mercedes just comes off as a heel, even though I think she's supposed to be at least like a baby face. I'm not saying like that Willow is a heel in this situation, but. And maybe that's the intent, but I don't know, man. I just feel like, you know, Mercedes is not as good at delivering promos, despite having her own personal writer. And I think they probably should be, they got to look. I assume they're looking every week. I hope that they're looking at this and like, okay, how can we adjust this so it better benefits Mercedes? But I think you have to have her as a heel. I think she's got to be a heel 100% after the pay-per-view match. Whatever path you take to get there.
Yeah.
And I'm still floating that Chris and Stoke stab Willow in the back and form a group with Mercedes. I think that would make a lot of sense, since Stoke could help Mercedes with promos and Chris could be the... you know, the person that does most of the working in the ring when Mercedes is not wrestling very often, obviously. But I mean, the thing that with Mercedes that kind of drives me crazy is the thing she does best is wrestle. And yet here we are, she's not wrestling.
Yeah. Willow looked like a big star compared to her.
Oh, yeah. Willow is.
You know what? Maybe
she should just be the top person in the division now. Yeah, I'm just going to say that. Like, maybe she should just be.
You know what I want to see? I want to see Willow go in there. I want to see her beat Mercedes' ass at Double or Nothing, and then have Mercedes come from the ground up and then take the title. Mercedes hasn't wrestled in what? Over a year?
Something
you can
like
easily
that, yeah.
Tell the story that she's rusty. Willow's been wrestling nonstop.
You. I 100% agree with you. Do you think that's actually going to happen, though?
No, but I think they should pivot to it.
I agree with you.
I really think they should pivot to it. Or you have a DQ finish.
I think no DQ finish. I think the finish should be that she cheats to win with the help of Stoke and Chris. I think that I mean, I've been saying this for weeks. I think
who, Willow or Mercedes?
Mercedes should.
Okay.
That Willow is going to get stabbed in the back and she'll have to, going to get that, get the baby face for a revenge run and eventually beat Mercedes, I would hope. But yeah, I think maybe I'm working myself into fantasy booking as a shoot kind of thing, but that's what I see is happening. So,
hey, you know what? It's not a bad move, but I would like, Willow comes down, beats Monet, and then you got to return Dr. Britt Baker at some point. This could be a good time to return her. I don't know. Willow's just a bigger deal to me.
She feels like, really like, I'm not going to say like super hot or anything, but she, I mean, it's not like, you know, the peak of Osprey coming out or even Swerve coming out, but she gets really good reactions when she comes out. She's instantly over with any crowd. She's a supernatural baby face. She's got to be in that like absolute top of the division mix. And it doesn't have to be with a women's title because they've shown a willingness to treat the TBS title as an equal championship. But they got to, they've been showing signs over the past few months. They've been building to her being a top woman in that division, but she has to be in that position. She has to be a top woman in AEW because she's just that damn good. And they've stumbled, mm-hmm. you know, they've looked into her, frankly, because I think the only reason that she isn't like 3 years in a WWE run is because she's not, you know, a swimsuit model, you know, traditionally, you know, she's not a Johnny A selection. Ugh. felt gross just saying that. And instead, she's actually very talented at wrestling stuff. So that's probably not a particularly, apologies if that was like a dumb way to go about saying that, but like what I'm trying to say is she's really damn good at pro wrestling and she should be treated as such.
They lucked into her because Mercedes Moné broke her ankle.
Yeah.
Then she got the run with a title that wasn't even supposed to happen. And it helps show a different side of her that AEW then did not have to develop at all. Oh, yeah, we can do that. Okay. Like, it's a happy accident.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I she's just so talented. It's really impressive mm-hmm. every time. She just pops off the screen every time she's out there. I really do enjoy the Stoke and Chris act. In a sense, you know, it'd be nice if they kept that going longer, but I do think that it might be time to have the turn happen. And I don't know, that's kind of my big takeaways from the week, other than blood squirting out of Swerve's head. Good Lord. In the aftermath of that match with Brian Cage, after that attack, what a visual, I guess. Boy, howdy. We got one question of the week, the South Dakota Jones fantasy booking question of the week, trademark Mark. What is your best case scenario for John Moxley losing the IWGP championship? Tyler, South Dakota Jones over here says, Zach Sabre Jr. at All In.
Shooter at Wrestle Kingdom. If I had to fantasy book it, it's Shooter. And
they have to use him to get a young guy over, I think.
Yeah. People are still mad about that first match being at Resurgence. Look, I understand you have the story with Dominion. The whole point of Resurgence is to get Shooter over in America more. It's not about the native fan base. And we can have a discussion about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. And I think there's some very fair points on both sides. Regardless, that's the direction they decided to go. And I get it. They want Shooter to kind of be their next native star to be popular in America. And you paired him with Mox. That's a great way to get popular in America.
Mm-hmm.
I think a great story would be you need to elevate a young guy badly. You have Shooter win the G1 and beat Moxley 1-2-3 in the Tokyo Dome. Elevate him. He's a made man. Now take the ball and run with it. That's what I would do. Now, would it suck for Moxley to be gone for so long? Because you could say that with both AEW and New Japan. Because he's not going to be at all these Road 2 shows. He's not going to be this, that, or the other thing. But he's going to be over on every tour. If Moxley's champ, he's going to be in the G1. And you know Moxley's probably chomping at the bit to be in G1 again.
Oh, yeah. He'd love to, I'm sure.
So if I had to pick my route, Shooter wins the G1, beats John Moxley for the title at Wrestle Kingdom. That's how you elevate a big guy. And you can use that loss of resurgence as part of the story. Well, he goes to G1, he wins, and he wants his retribution. He wants to beat his mentor. Now, Gato loves to tell that long-term story where you don't beat your mentor for like 6-7 matches.
Yeah.
But I think you just got to do it. I think you just got to do it with Shota and elevate him and make him a top guy. Because even as a young lion, people were talking about him as a top guy. Like, this isn't new territory.
Yeah, I just get the feeling that he Ghetto really plays things so slow that it's practically a detriment at this point, because, you know, earlier on in his run, he could do that because Tanahashi was already a made guy and a top guy, and you know, he got Okada over quickly. So you had two top guys, and, you know, Naito happened and got over very well too. Right now you've got Naito, who is not at the end of his career, but at the end of, like, I think his main event run shelf life. Not because of overness, but because of physical ability and mm-hmm. physical deterioration. And you've got these, you know, these young guys. I mean, I guess we're in Narita, but, like, you know. But Yota Tsuji, Shota Umino, and the third one that I am blanking on because I'm a very good wrestling knower.
Yuya.
Yes, Yuya Uemura. Thank you. I think Yota is the guy of the three, like the easiest to get over, at least. He just feels like a superstar.
I disagree. I think it's Shooter.
I like Shooter too, but I just think Yota has just got special charisma on a different level. And so that would be my pick. But I do think that holding it to Wrestle Kingdom and having it be Moxley losing to someone, Shooter has the natural hook. I would probably go with Shooter from a storyline perspective. I would probably slightly favor Tsuji from a who do I think is really the guy perspective. But, you know, it's close enough where I'm not going to lose sleep over picking Shooter instead. And, yeah, I mean, that's probably what I would do. I just think that is, you know, New Japan is in such an interesting position right now. And I think that... it's going to be really interesting to see what they do over the years, over the next few years, because they are in a transition period, and it came faster than they probably expected, because in part the Japanese economy falling off so much, and Okada wanting the bucks, the money, to be clear, and Ospreay, you know, being pretty open about, okay, this is probably going to be my last New Japan contract, so I'm going to go somewhere else and get paid more. Fortunately, they still have, I guess, a little access to him. And I totally get New Japan fans being angry about it. Like, it sucks. It's also the economics of any sport with free agency, you know. So, mm-hmm. It doesn't make it easier. It's just not a surprise. Yeah.
I'm fascinated to see what New Japan does with their top title, because it's going to be interesting.
It is. It's going to be a really interesting couple years for them. So.
Mm-hmm. Lastly, Darby Allin makes his return, Fred.
Yes.
To AEW to replace Eddie Kingston. He still looks like a mess. and I don't mean that as an insulting thing.
Flip it around.
Cool. Yeah. But look, it's Darby. He don't give a shit. It's anarchy in the arena. You can hide that. You can hide stuff. Because it's not a traditional wrestling match. They're just going to brawl all over the MGM Grand. Look, I think Darby's a perfect guy to be with Team AEW. He's one of the original pillars. He's pissed off at Jack Perry. And he's defending the company that has meant so much to him. He's talked about how it's kind of saved him. And he's been like throughout like the pandemic and then throughout months of other things, like Darby wrestled like every single week. That matters.
Yeah.
I think it's a good choice. And Anarchy in the Arena looks like it could be pretty good. Danielson's going to get another match against Okada. I wouldn't be shocked if that was Wembley or All In. I still think Nigel McGuinness is going to wrestle Danielson at All In. But we'll find out.
Yeah. I'll save the breakdown for like Swerve's place in AEW as a main eventer. We can discuss that next week. You know, it's a very interesting transition period for AEW, so
very much so. That is our show today. We are going to be back next week because Fred, next week we have the heat check.
It is heat check time, baby.
And we're gonna try and get a special episode planned with a special guest talking about the 5-year history of All Elite Wrestling.
Oh, okay. Ooh la la. Yeah, this is news to the Fred. So,
Fred, we've talked about this in DMs. You absolute buffoon.
I thought it was just going to be you. So,
well, I could not do it last week. So it's better that it's both of us anyways. Go ahead.
G plug flagrantstats.com. I've wrote 3 articles about the WNBA in the past week. Go to that and you can read those if you're interested. And if you're not, cool. Go pet a dog.
Yes, adopt doggies. Cheddar is a good boy, and Odie is now just gets jealous of him and wants to kill him whenever we pet him. Pet Cheddar. Otherwise, he's fine. So we're making progress.
With that,
I'm Tyler. He's Fred. Have a great weekend.
Take care, y'all.
Hey, everybody. My name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media. We talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.